In this episode of What the Prophets Say, join me, Emma Stark, Jonah Wilson, and Matt Johnson as we talk about all things leadery and have honest chats about this year and boundaries. This is a good one, guys. Hello, friends, and a very warm welcome to another episode of What the Prophets Say with me, Emma Stark. I'm joined in the studio today by two of your favourites. You are well used to them now. They almost need no introduction because you will know them by their accents, because they are the prophet that is, Jonah.
Hello.
And Matt. Hi. I didn't even do your surnames this time.
You didn't even do our surnames.
We're on a first name basis with our listeners.
I think you are not, but actually in America, you don't even call them surnames.
No, we don't. It's our last name.
Yeah. Do you just call it last name?
Just what's your last name? Yeah, we don't use the surname language.
What second name mean to an American?
I don't even know that we use that second name.
Oh, do you not?
No.
You just do first names and
last names.
First and last.
Yeah, what's your first and last name?
Okay. Yeah. We call it first name and surname.
First name, surname, and then middle name as well.
Yeah, I don't know why the difference is.
I don't know. It's just like us removing the U's and words and you keeping them. Who knows?
I got into real hot water in my, because we're talking about language differences. I was preaching in Quebec, which of course is French speaking, and my French is a humiliating embarrassment. I'm so sorry, French speakers. I try and it's useless. And because of course we talk about the difference between the trash can in America.
Yeah, or the bin.
And we talk about the rubbish bin or the bin here.
Yeah.
And as our differences, so I'm preaching away merrily, trying to use the word in French about trashing something, which is a poubelle. La poubelle means la to poubelle. Trash. La poubelle.
Yeah.
But I said la poubelle as
like
a
pleu.
Or as opposed to poubelle, which is something that is very beautiful. Oh. So I said the complete opposite. I said something was very beautiful rather than something needed trashed. Glorious differences in language. Very unhelpful. Very unhelpful. Anyway, so guys, we are hurtling towards the tail end of the year.
We are.
And everybody's needing a wee bit of a holiday.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Tell me how you're going to spend your Christmases and your New Year's Eve.
Well, New Year's Eve, we are at at the house of the Stark
you're,
Manor.
You're at our
Stark
house.
We are at your house. Yes.
For a wee party.
For a wee party. Yeah.
David's annual year-end quiz.
David's quiz. And then I've heard an amazing story about David's fireworks.
David, see, honestly, David, I don't know. We've no training in this. He goes to, is it Costco, and buys ridiculous numbers of fireworks and then never anchors them in the ground properly. It's like dicing with death. Have you never been to our house for Hogmanay before?
We've always had the dog until this year. So
because it died.
The dog died.
Oh, God. Well, sorry.
Sad guys.
Sorry. I do want to say congratulations, your first Hogmanay party, but I want to say with your dog's death.
It's a good thing to be able to go out for New Year, though.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't leave the dog for Hogmanay? We call New Year's Eve Hogmanay in Scotland.
Yeah, he was petrified of fireworks. So he would like quiver and shake like a leaf. And I always feel really bad. I'm like, oh, I can't leave him like this. Even though there was nothing you could do to console
him. Hang on a minute. You've not done a New Year's Eve party, a Hogmanay party for years because of your dog.
Yeah, so the last one we did was, I think we were still dating.
What?
No.
So every year since then, we've just been like, oh, we'll take care of the dog. Oh, we've had the dog. So,
Well, we usually do bacon butties, bacon rolls. I don't know whether I can be bothered with that this year. I'll figure it out. We do a David quiz. It's very competitive.
I'm excited.
Then fireworks, then some Kaylee dancing in the garden, but you have to wear your coat because it usually rains. And then Ali McFarlane sometimes does karaoke.
Yeah, but she's on vocal rest, so we need to all make sure that we keep her on vocal rest.
It's fine, guys. We can leave the singing to me.
There we go. See,
we're and it's usually
we'll
quite
do
late.
You and Suzanne. Suzanne's desperate to be on
me and Suzanne, dream
the
team.
Worship team. So this will be your guys' time to shine.
Oh my goodness!
Back to back.
Yes. Yeah. And late night chats.
And late night chats.
It's going to be a very full. I don't know where everybody's going to
We're just going to just sleep, I don't know where sleep we're in all your house, everywhere.
Oh, right.
On the island, in the kitchen.
Right, thanks. That'd be great. Gee, thanks. Okay, and what? And you're coming to ours?
Yeah, yeah. So we are fitting in between your birthday, which is this coming week.
Yes.
We're then...
Uh-huh, we're doing
my wife
more
and I,
Scottish
this
dancing.
Is the first broadcast I get to say my wife and
yay!
Becca and I will be hop, skipping, and jumping over to Portugal for honeymoon for a week, and then we'll come back, and then we'll be here for the Hogmanay, which is my first Hogmanay as well. I've never been able to celebrate in Scotland, so this will be so fun.
It's great fun.
Yeah.
Where are you going to in Portugal?
We're going to, is it Moreda? I think it's Moreda. It's an island. So I've never been to Portugal at all, but I've never been to this island either. It's botanical, volcanic.
I wonder what the weather's like this time of year. It'll be certainly warmer than Scotland.
Warmer than Scotland. Sure. I think it's like between 17 and 19 degrees. So Celsius. I think that's in the 60s or 70s Fahrenheit for all my Americans. I'm trying to learn.
Yes, could we do it different? Yeah.
So this is supposed to be warmer, but we don't care. It's going to be sunny. That's all that matters for me. There is sun, there's a spa, there's a pool.
There we go. So, it sounds like a honeymoon.
Sounds like a honeymoon.
A true honeymoon.
They will see a lot of the weather.
Yes, of course.
Very cheeky. God bless honeymoons at Christmas.
What are you doing for Christmas, Emma?
Yeah. Oh, I'm turning into MasterChef. I love cooking. I love the challenge of it. And I've got... a few waifs and strays of the human variety. I always like
our favorites, though.
I love to have people around.
Yeah.
And David's parents are over, and my parents are over, and all the children are back, and people who've nowhere else to go are turning up.
Yeah.
A big turkey dinner, hams, pigs in blankets, stuffings, roast potato, the whole lot.
For all of the British viewers, we all want to know, how do you do your stuffing, Emma?
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the proper... Do you know what? I've actually already bought the sausage meat already to do it properly.
Winning.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah. So it is an art. Why do you have a particular stuffing recipe?
No, I don't have a particular stuffing recipe, but my mum has an amazing recipe she does like big meat stuffing balls.
Yes.
But they're huge.
Ooh.
And they taste the best. And
yeah, they're better than the turkey. Yeah.
Deep fry?
Yeah, so we have a thing in the States where you do the stuffing ball and you deep fry it.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
That's sacrilege. Sorry, you deep fry stuffing.
Oh, no. Stuffing, yes.
No.
And it's crunchy on the outside, but soft on the inside.
No.
Well,
is that normal in America?
It's a thing.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Matt. We've been educated.
Been educated. Yeah. I don't know if I would like to take the lessons I've learned and put them into practice, though.
Well, to be fair, yes, I've educated Becca on a lot of things American, and she assumes that I do all of these things. I just say, no, this is just a thing that Americans do.
Like deep-fried stuffing balls.
Yeah.
And
I've been educating her on all the Midwestern things that we call, air quote, salads. So that are actually dessert, but we would put it as a side dish. So ambrosia salad with the Cool Whip and the fruit and the marshmallows in it. And she's like, that is a dessert, Mike, but it goes by the side dishes.
I'm sorry, there are several words in there I did not understand. What is Cool Whip?
Yeah.
So Cool Whip is a fake whipped cream. It's made with like hydrogenated oils. Everything that hate about America in a tub of sugary deliciousness.
But you put it with savory.
Yes. Yeah.
So you take
the tub of Cool Whip, which is basically whipped cream.
Oh my.
Oh
you
no.
You dump that in a bowl.
Uh-huh.
Then you put shavings of coconut in there. Then you put a can of pineapple in there.
What?
Maraschino cherries.
What? No.
And then you put a bag of miniature marshmallows, specifically the multicolored ones, to give it color.
Oh, no.
You dump that all in a bowl and you start that as ambrosia salad.
Wow.
I don't know what the right response to that is without being culturally insensitive.
The first thing I thought when you said Cool Whip was walnut whip, because that's a Christmas thing in the UK, right? Did you used to have a walnut whip?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a really nasty bit of chocolate with a walnut, which is probably...
Oh, they are nasty. I love those.
Can we just say that's not salad? We can agree it's not salad.
Yes, that's dessert.
You wouldn't put chicken with that, would you?
So you would go through your assembly line, you get your chicken, you get your baked beans, get your corn on the cob, and then you put a dollop of ambrosia salad on that same plate and you eat it together.
Did you say baked beans for Christmas dinner?
Well, yeah.
I
Well, specifically more, I'd say for Thanksgiving. We do baked beans for Thanksgiving.
I'm literally lying, shocked.
like a ton of Heinz.
Well, no, not Heinz. Because you guys do, I say you, like I'm not here now too. We do tomato sauce here, but in the States, it's baked Bush's baked beans, and it's in a molasses-y, maple syrupy flavored baked beans. It's more sweet.
We are fearfully and wonderfully different. Let's move on. Thank you, gentlemen, for now that we're all culinary slightly turned in our stomach. Mm-hmm. Marshmallows and chicken.
Listen,
yay!
I'm thankful culturally for being here in Scotland, the great nation of Scotland.
Thank you. We're glad to have you and glad that you've married. It's a joyous thing.
Yeah.
Okay, lessons and things that we want to talk about and things that we want to stretch ourselves to think better and think differently and be more in the image of Christ. You two guys actually turned up with quite a similar thought that you'd had uniquely around the need that God has for us to become better leaders.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And all of us to dress more proficiently and profusely in leadership clothes and to think about the leadership of the people of God in leadership crisis in the nation and to be sheep, yes, but also to be leaders simultaneously and to know how to follow, but to know how to lead at the same time. Mm-hmm. And the real push that there is for the whole body of Christ to grow up, to think about impact and influence and leadership and development and not just to kind of slalom through days without thinking strategic thoughts. Mm-hmm. So what would you like us to learn? Who's going to kick us off?
I'll kick us off. I'll kick us off with a lighthearted saying that Jesus said. We have a leadership problem in the church.
You heard? I think we do. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the Lord said it's because we are not journeying with people. And I think there is a need in the body of Christ right now to recognize, like you just said, we are called to lead. Once you've journeyed and far enough in the kingdom of God, you've said the sinner's prayer, you've been in church for, done the Bible study. At some point, you kind of need to get out of the pew and get out of the Bible study and start leading something. And you need to actually grab hold of that concept. Mm-hmm. And so the Lord started to show me, he's like, listen, Peter was being discipled by Jesus and he was allowed to journey in the process. So in the 3 years of ministry with Jesus, you saw Peter dip his toe in and out of the Spirit. One minute he's walking these things that could not be revealed except through the Spirit alone.
You're quoting Matthew 16, Caesarea Philippi.
That very next verse, then he's saying something and Jesus has to say, get behind me, you're a hindrance to the kingdom.
Yeah.
You see this dipping in and out and God creates a grace for the ability to journey. But then at some point he looks at Peter and says, I need you to go. I need you to go out. I need you to lead. I need you to build the church. Go and lead. And there's this sense of the Lord really right now in the atmosphere and in the earth saying, where are the people to lead? Where are the Peters? You've done the journey. You've learned how to journey. Now I need you to find others and I need you to journey with them. And you need to create space and capacity and grace for them to fall, for them to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But it's really that sense of I need you to go and you need to lead.
So 2026 is if you are in leadership, you need to be learning to release many others.
Yes.
Yep.
Or if you're not in leadership, you need to start to be in a gathering and training and equipping and releasing mindset yourself.
Yeah.
But both need to be there. And if you're not in one, you need to be in the other.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think,
or both.
I think the idea of leadership, and you've really walked this out with you and David and GPA, it is parenting. So can you talk to us a little bit about what parenting versus pastoring looks like and how that applies to leadership?
Yes, I think parenting loves ferociously and parenting will generously release and give mm-hmm. but know that it's always cleaning up a mess.
Yeah.
And pastoring sometimes, pastoring shouldn't be a sanitizer, we made it, but it very often is overly sanitized and becomes a control and structure and feeding a system. I do think there is this urgency, feel listeners, the urgency mm-hmm. to be discipling and releasing and gathering and yeah. pushing and sending, because the growth that we are going through in, first of all, the growth in the people, number of people getting saved
yep.
is going to mm-hmm. require more leaders than we have right now.
Absolutely.
It absolutely yep. is. But more than that, the sense of the outward mm-hmm. Looking of the development of Christianity as the major world religion mm-hmm. and the mass amount of harvest that we're going to have, more than that,
yeah.
the crisis in the nations is going to require leadership thinking.
Yeah.
It's going to require governance thinking.
Yeah, come on.
And so it, for two reasons, the crisis requires a different thought
mm-hmm. yep.
and the growth requires a different level of equipping. Yeah. And so I think God is saying, come on, come on, come on, come on.
Yeah.
Push, push, push. Trust people. Give mm-hmm. big mantles. Release yeah. people. What is the worst that can happen? You don't learn till you're on the job.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And just as you're speaking there, Emma, you can yeah. feel, and listeners, you'll be able to feel as you hear this or watch this, your spirit is starting to get excited, because we're talking about movement.
Yeah.
And if we want to move with the Spirit and press into the yeah. Lord and start to release people, that's the flow of the Spirit. That's what the Lord is ushering us into in this year. And it's almost that, have a leadership thought. Don't look to the leader and put them as, oh, you are the man in the platform. You're the one that's going to bring the leadership thought. No, no, no. The Lord has made you to be a wise, creative, wonderful person. You are an individual that the Lord has designed. Don't diminish your own thoughts. If we are overthinking because we allow so many people to come into our thought space, we aren't having a leadership thought, we're having a sheep thought, and we're being led constantly. That doesn't build growth, and it doesn't build a leadership thought. What that builds is you can be a sheep and you can be in the pew, and there's no movement in that. You can feel, it feels stagnant as the Lord is ushering us into a movement space.
Yeah.
Two stories that have happened in recent days, and in fact, one was, what day is it today? Tuesday. Late last night. She's sorry. Jet lag. What day? Where are we? So yesterday we did an ordination online, which I've never done one online before, David and I, and joining, increasing our number of associate ministers in the family and the covenant of relationships that we have, very remarkably and special set of friendships within that group of associate ministers. Now, partly the reason they'll not mind me sharing this, they're very, very dear to me, was partly because they have a sick relative who wanted to watch it,
yeah.
an ordination. So we expedited that and did that more efficiently. Now we'll do it properly in person as well. But watching their story, and they'll tell it themselves better than I will, so grace. When the sickness in the family happened, and the sense of, right, let's get you ordained so that it can be celebrated before somebody goes into glory, it pushed them and it pushed them to end a season well.
Wow.
And it pushed them to detangle from relationships that had their day.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushed them to not overstay in false honor.
Mm-hmm.
And it pushed them to think now is the time rather than being sluggish about endings. And so there was a real learn of God needs us now.
Yeah.
And we need to grab a fresh anointing, a fresh agreement to be able to lead.
Yeah,
and they texted me, and the conversation over the weekend before we came to yesterday and the Monday evening of agreement, and all of my associate ministers got on the call in all of the time zones around the world, because ordination for us isn't just what David and I do. They all raised their hands on the call. They all spoke over their lives, a real sweet international moment. And you could see the impact it was having
absolutely.
Of release, go.
Yeah.
But it made them get ready to walk away from some things that needed to be left. And I think when you take on a mantle of leadership and when you realize God has called you, it makes you expedite endings mm-hmm. that you jolly well need to have yeah. expedited. Leave that thing. Mm-hmm. Leave that thing. Yeah, you know, and start to walk in the mm-hmm. freshness of the call of God for now. Mm-hmm. Don't miss the season. Don't miss the timings of God. Don't be too slow. Do you want mm-hmm. to comment on that before I tell the second story?
Yeah, I think where my head goes, because I've been in wedding season,
yes. is
I think you're pushing into a concept that I've just recently walked out, the yes. leaving and the cleaving. But I think that can be applied
yes.
as a biblical concept of us leaving and then cleaving to Jesus.
Yes.
And to the leadership that he's trying to pull us up into requires almost that sense of the scripture that says, let the dead bury the dead. Kind of leaving that old chapter behind and stepping into, listen, I've called you up, come up here, leave behind the things that are called to be left behind. I don't know if you want to comment on that a little bit more, but almost that leaving and cleaving, there's a actual leadership concept
can I ask you in that, Jonah, please don't say anything you're not comfortable mm-hmm. with saying, but the leaving, cleaving and one flesh, the three biblical jumps that form a marriage covenant, mm-hmm. you leave, you cleave, and you become one flesh. And at every wedding I ever preach at, I preach this almost a version yeah. of those three words, because mm-hmm. they're the words of a covenant. They're the yeah. words of marriage. Yeah. Leave, yeah. cleave, one flesh. How easy or difficult? Was it challenging or was it straightforward? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes leaving is more difficult than we might anticipate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that before the prayer, you're feeling all the feelings, but there is something about, and I think probably this individual last night with the associate ministers felt the same thing.
Yes.
There's something about when we were in the office before the actual wedding ceremony.
And the staff were praying for you.
Having the entire staff, having all of GPA gather mm-hmm. around us and say, we are going to pray over you and release you into leaving and cleaving. That did something in the spirit. Mm-hmm. I could feel the insides of me being literally rewired as mm-hmm. I went through that process. Good. And I wonder, you know, this individual that you've just ordained into
yeah. husband, wife team, yeah. Uh-huh.
I wonder if that almost that rewiring and that sense of
yes,
biblically leaving and cleaving so that you can step into the call of God that he has on them. I'm almost wondering if there's the same kind of spiritual ramifications that they as a husband and wife went through when you prayed over them last night.
I think we're very used to living from the past mm-hmm. to the present. Mm-hmm. And we need to live from the present to the future.
Yeah, go there.
And I actually think that we've had a season where quite an extended, protracted period of time, if you don't like, I know people get a bit funny about the concept of a season, where we've been in quite a lot of dismantling mm-hmm. of status quo. We've talked a lot about the liminal space, yep. the in-between space. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the pivot year. Yep. We've had to let go of a lot of things. And it's had us living past to present.
Yeah.
And that's okay, because that's assessing where we've gone wrong. Mm-hmm. That's tearing down Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 10. That's had a little bit of a deconstructionist element to it. We don't want to be this sort of people. All of that, we've been quite past to present orientated. I think we're going to hit a gear change in 2026. Mm. And I started to prophesy this for the first time last night to my associate ministers group. I think in 2026, we're going to start to live present future mm-hmm. rather than past to present. Mm-hmm. And it's going to require hope. It's going to require yeah. bravery. We should have left. In other words, you need to have left and you need to have understood to live present mm-hmm. to future. You have to think about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're having to be ahead.
Yeah.
You're having to tell people what's coming. Yeah. You're having to know the days ahead. Mm-hmm. You're partnering with the Daniel 7 concept mm-hmm. of God being the Ancient of Days. In other words, the God who's lived every day already.
Yeah. Yep.
You're having to grab hold of the future and prophesy mm-hmm. it, strategize for it, understand it, receive the blueprints for it, rather than just always in reviewing the past. Mm-hmm. It's a day to live. Present future.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And I would love to ask you, Emma,
yes.
as someone that leads a ministry, if somebody if the god has told them to leave and they are then tying up loose ends and going, oh, I want to stay, I want to stay, I want to help my congregation. Yeah. Will, do you believe that they will hurt their congregation if they don't pivot and move quickly and or?
Yes, very, very much so. I think you become, you can accidentally become the problem. Anytime you have false loyalty, it's not loyalty. It when you have false loyalty or false honor, that's actually within the demonic system.
I
there are only two kingdoms.
Yeah.
So either you're in step with the kingdom of God or you're not.
It's as blatant as that.
And we're very bad at the leaving. And the beginning and the new covenants and the cleaving and the and in your case, Jonah, the what became one flesh, it's wrestling stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what I would say is this: we're not good at anticipating the future.
Yeah.
And if you can't anticipate that God will meet you in the future, if you can't salivate that at the God who always comes through, you actually get into false loyalty and false honor.
Yeah.
And it's in the ability to anticipate the goodness of God that keeps us moving.
Yeah. And it feels like watching leadership done badly, it's reactionary leadership. It's always a linear thought. I see a problem, I fix a problem, rather than when the Lord is saying, come up higher, have a thought with me, change your perspective. If we just spent time in relationship with the Father, changed our perspective, had a different stance, we wouldn't be reacting. We would be responding well out of that place of relationship with the Father rather than reacting out of our human space.
Because we're in the wrong place.
Because we're in the wrong place.
We give ourselves a grace. I'm not sure that God does.
Yeah. I want to keep pushing into the we're so past present focused instead of present future.
Yes.
I think that's we're still stuck in 2020 and COVID.
I would agree as the people of God.
We're so past, okay, we used to be in a pew. We used to gather. We used to have a mega church. We used to do all these things. But for now, we can only gather around a table. So we were past present. God was pushing us into, actually, I want you to be around the table. Actually, this is, I'm going to use a situation that's actually going to close down your churches and force you into the homes. But then as soon as we came out of COVID, because we were so past present focused, we said, well, the table isn't the ideal. It's the for now thing. Let's go back to what we know. Let's go back to filling pews.
I think you're absolutely onto something there. The second story, after telling the associate minister story, is I was with a church leader, husband and wife team. David and I were with them, and they had come out of a church of about 2,000. So by the time you got to 2,000, it's incredibly well. To be well structured and organized to make that whole together. And they had in a year led, gathered, become a church of 250. In a year, that's quite remarkable level of growth.
Yeah.
And the question to me that they had in the last handful of days was, what do we do when we grow even bigger? And very open-ended question. I don't think there was an agenda, but I think in it there was an understanding. I only know one option. I only know what I've left. Very much was implied in the question, how do I grow? And my comment to this leadership team, in fact, we sat with the leadership team over a couple of meals, and I said to them this, you've got to not give yourself a bigger building as a dream. Stop it. Because if you do what you saw happen before and you give yourself a bigger building as a dream, an endpoint, you're just going to recreate the history that you left that actually ran aground and became difficult and monarchy and all of that and controlling. The way you will save this is you will release many leaders fast. And you will push them out into a church planting movement rather than into a gathering movement. And you will keep them in a wearing the mantle of leadership mm-hmm. almost when you think they're too junior to do it. Mm-hmm. But it will save your people from the status quo and from traditionalism and from denominationalism and, mm-hmm. because you will push them out. Now, you will then have to not be the leader in the pastoring sense, but you'll become the overseer in the mm-hmm. biblical sense of that, where you're holding the vision and you're cleaning up their messes. Mm-hmm. And you mm-hmm. can see the sheer panic on his face.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a stretching place to release and then to oversee rather than to gather and to just be responsible for a good teach.
Because now you're responsible, like Paul, for a Timothy.
Yes.
Who goes mm-hmm. out into the world and now he's writing letters. I have an issue here. I have challenges here. Help me, Paul.
Yes.
Because Paul no longer was in a space where he mm-hmm. could steward a church anymore. He had to steward as an apostle multiple spiritual children and help them grow and lead well.
Now, we do need the big corporate spaces. There's no doubt about it. You need the thrill of agreement, of corporate song, or, you know, the sense of, whoo, I'm not alone.
Yeah.
But I think the best church is the one that fits in your house.
Yeah, absolutely. But how much of that also happens now? You've released how many now associate ministers? At 30 now?
There's 40 on that WhatsApp group. So, but mm-hmm. two of them are David and I. And so, yes.
Yeah, so over 40 in less than, I don't even know when you started.
Very fast.
Less than 24 months, we'll just say.
Can I tell you, David and I were hesitant to it. Because our concept of ordination was very traditionally old-fashioned, very Baptist and very Presbyterian. Mm-hmm. And we were quite like, well, what are we doing? We don't want to create a franchise mm-hmm. here. We don't want to create a denomination. But what we are curating now, actually with an awful lot of joy, is a relational network.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And then they get on a call like last night. Yes. How much joy was on that call to raise up and release yet another associate minister couple last night?
The fact that they all raised their hands on the screen mm-hmm. to bless somebody into leadership.
Yeah.
From, you know, Romania and Cape Town and Japan and America. I mean, they were all on it. And Mexico and they were all on the call. And to do it together, to extend a mm-hmm. family of leaders mm-hmm. is a remarkable thing.
Yeah.
And I think we are only extending the members of a congregation right now. There's a different joy to extend and mm-hmm. grow a family of leaders.
Yeah. And that concept, Emma, breaks the CEO mindset of this is my baby. I need to protect that. That's not a biblical thought. That is not that is not kingdom building. Actually, what you're talking about, raising a company of leaders so then you can lead well with mm-hmm. one another. It takes that ownership of I'm the man or I'm the person or the man for the hour. That is an old thinking that actually God does not want to use now.
Yes. You two gentlemen both had thoughts about the getting alongside people. Can you give me your thoughts on that? Because
mm-hmm.
you both had said particularly your prophetic word there, Jonah, mm-hmm. if we dial back close to the beginning of the conversation, that Jesus was saying to you in a word of the Lord that there was a lack, that the crisis in leadership was because we weren't walking with people.
With people. Mm-hmm. There is a lack of journeying. So I think there is, what I've noticed in our generation is mm-hmm. quick to raise up, quick to say you can do it, quick mm-hmm. to give the title.
Oh, okay.
But then they hit a roadblock, or then they hit a moral failure. The inability to then have accountability and parents, if I'm being honest, to then get in the weeds with you and journey with you. I think that's where we've gotten it wrong. So we've gotten the concept that Jesus shows of you can have a go. You can be, you know, like Peter in your teens or early 20s leading something. But then we've failed when we've recognized, oh, you're 22 or 23 years old. You've had a failure. I'm now going to leave you. There's almost like this abandonment.
Okay, mm-hmm. I see what you
mean. That's where I think we need to fix. And I feel like that's where Jesus is real grabbing hold of us and saying, come on, there's a multi-generational harvest we need to be after. That means that we need to be thinking multi-generational leadership. So that means we actually should have grandparents parenting parents who are parenting kids. You should be seeing 3 to 4 levels of spiritual leadership where, and I see this obviously with your household, your kids can go to your father
Yes,
their grandfather, and they can ask him questions that maybe you may not have the answer to.
Well, it's interesting. We actually, we've 101 different WhatsApp groups as a family, but one, but one of them is called the Whole Family Bible Chat. That's the name of the WhatsApp. Now, in that is David's mum. David's a wee bit more infirm these days, and with dementia. But so David's mum is in there, and my dad is in there. And what is fascinating is to watch my children ask the grandparents theological questions.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, in more recent history, David and I were leading a situation. You two guys will be very aware of this. And we'd done all of our, you know, 50-year-old David and I best thoughts. And actually, David and I have an awful lot of like years of leadership between us. Mm-hmm. And then we talked to our trustees. Of course, one of them is your wife. Mm-hmm. And one of them is my best friend from childhood. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we're all sort of zooming around within the same age pool. Yeah. Chatted to Louise Reed, chatted to my leadership coach. Mm-hmm. But again, we're all sort of in the same age pool. Yeah. So we were brainstorming a difficult situation, getting some really good stuff because there's a lot of years tallied up there between us. And then the killer conversation, I thought, I'll ring my dad.
Mm.
I got on the phone to my dad. Dad, can you sit down? I've got questions.
Yeah.
And he knows what's coming because he knows the kind of like, right, I'm dealing with a difficult situation in leadership. Now, my dad is 77, 78. Oh, sorry, Dad, I can't remember. born in 1948. What does that make him?
Over 70 years, we'll just put it that way.
You're too mad.
I think he's 78 for the record, guys.
Okay, something like that. And as sharp as a tack, he says, this is the scripture you need. This is how you lead through this. This is where you need to set in boundaries. And he gave me boundaries that I would not have been so strict on. And I thought, you understand that if David and I in our leadership don't set boundaries now, and I think Dave and I are quite good on this, we would have been woolly and not enabled the person that we were dealing with the time to heal.
Yeah.
That he taught us something that you only know in your late 70s, that I can't know in my 50s.
Mm-hmm. It's hard though, until you go through situations like this.
How do you know?
What do you do in those situations? Yes. Other than either you lean into your flesh and say, this is how I would fleshly, emotionally respond.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or there's almost like, I know you use the language, the hive mind. It's pulling on the oneness of us being in the spirit as Bible-believing, spirit-led individuals. How do we collectively then deal with this situation that's at hand?
And I think I love, Emma, what you said there about boundary lines and how you and David set them.
Yes.
And that's something that the Lord's been really having conversation with me about. You set your boundary lines. And friends, if you're hearing this and you're thinking, oh, someone has an overstep in boundary, or someone said something to me, you're the one that gives up the boundary line. If you need to take ground back, then jolly well take it back. It's sometimes not a nice conversation, but as you said, Emma, you have to set them. And sometimes you have to be strong to allow people to heal and heal well.
It's interesting what a boundary does. It's a bit like overstaying in a place when God's moved you to birth something or moved you to lead. If you don't set, we're too woolly, we're too soft. I want to actually quote a poem that I grew up with. Good fences make good neighbors. It's a poem. Oh, it's I'm going to have to get Suzanne to Google it. She's sitting the class behind the glass. Good fences make good neighbors. And the poem is about somebody who grows an orchard and somebody on the other side of the wall who keeps sheep. And if you don't have a good fence, you can't be good neighbors because the sheep come in and eat the apples. Do we have it? Good fences make good neighbors.
The Mending Wall by Robert Frost.
Of course, it's The Mending Wall by Robert Frost. Can we? I'm going to have to read it to you. Sorry. For the tape, we're going to have tape. I love Robert Frost poetry. And come into the screen. Yes, come into the screen.
The Wonderful Suzanne.
It is. Boop, boop, boop. Oh, do you mind if I look? If you want, you can scroll on, but you're going to have to indulge. I've not read this poem by Robert Frost in a long time.
It.
Something there is that doesn't love a wall. Isn't that a great thought? Mm-hmm. What an opening line, mending walls. That sends the frozen ground swell under it and spills the upper boulders in the sun and makes gaps even two can pass abreast. The work of hunters is another thing. I have come after them and made repair. So he's talking about the breaches in the wall. He's come and he's made repair. Where they have left not one stone on a stone, but they would have the rabbit out of hiding to please the yelping dogs. The gaps, I mean, no one has seen them made or heard them made, but at spring, mending time, we find them there. Mm-hmm. Now, what he's talking about is the seasonal need to mend boundaries, okay?
Yeah, so good.
I let my neighbour know beyond the hill, on a day we meet to walk the line. In other words, they walk together to discuss their boundaries and set the wall between us once again, that we keep the wall between us as we go. To each the boulders that have fallen, to each, and some are loaves and some so nearly balls. We have to use a spell to make them balance. Mm-hmm. In other words, it's quite a skill to build a wall. Stay where you are until our backs are turned. We wear our fingers rough with handling them. Oh, just another kind of outdoor game. One on a side. It comes to little more. There where is we do not need the wall. He is all pine and I am an apple orchard. Mm-hmm. My apple trees will never get across and eat the cones under his pines, I tell him. He only says, good fences make good neighbors. Mm-hmm. Spring is the mischief in me, and I wonder if I could put a notion in his head. Why do they make good neighbors? Isn't it where there are cows? But here there are no cows. Before I built a wall, I'd ask to know what I was walling in or walling out, and to whom I was like to give offence. Something there is that doesn't love a wall, that wants it down. I could say elves to him, but it's not elves exactly. And I'd rather he said it for himself. I see him there bridging a stone grasped firmly by the top in each hand, like an old stone savaged arm. He moves in darkness, as it seems to me, not of woods only and the shade of men. He will not go behind his father saying, and he likes having thought of it so well, he says again, good fences make good neighbors. Yeah. It's so, sorry, I'm going to go see this on the phone. Mm-hmm. I so love a Robert Frost poem, but the whole sense, sorry, we should quote scripture, but now we're quoting poetry. The walking between annually.
Yeah.
To reframe how we behave with each other.
Absolutely. And the importance actually of reframing it annually. Don't make a decision and keep it forever unless you've been married.
Yes, that actually here are our boundaries.
Yes.
And in the spring we come again to see what gaps we have wrongly allowed and to re-put up our boundaries.
Yeah.
That's good leadership.
It's quite a special thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
To walk together and say, perhaps we let some things too woolly. Perhaps we were wrongly close here where we should have had a bit of safe distance. Perhaps this is where we need a gate where we can meet each other more easily. And we can swing in and out of each other's lives here. But perhaps here, let's find a stone and say, here's health for each of us. And my father, in our more recent situation, helped me out with that, where you lose the right to proximity by behavior or where you gain the right to proximity by behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I love that too, because yeah. I'm sure you've seen this in all aspects as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone wants access to leaders. Everyone yes. wants to pull mm-hmm. on you. And so it's that sense of you can have access to pull on me, say in this area, but mm-hmm. I also need to set a boundary for my health and wellness.
Yes.
And I know you use this saying a lot, Matt, wells and drains, not to say that everyone's a drain, but you do have to have a sense of as yeah. a leader, boundary wise, who are the individuals that are life giving that can pour into me
yes.
so that I can go back out and be the thing that you need to pull on me for, to be pulled on the hem. But I can't constantly be pulled on 24/7. There needs to be a sense of a boundary that says I go and I retreat to be with the Father. Or in your case, mm-hmm. I go and retreat to be with David, your yes. safe place, you know, yeah, being able to yes. be together yes. and that oneness there needs to be boundaried, rightfully so.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And I would just say, friends, whoever's listening to this, I think we can all hold our hands up this year and go, it's a hard lesson to learn mm-hmm. the lesson of boundaries. And if you can pull anything from this, boundary lines are so important, and it can be painful when they're misused and where trust is broken.
Yes. And I think the boundary lines, as we said, for some of our associate ministers yeah. who were leaving
yeah.
and needed to put a stone mm-hmm. back in a wall
yeah.
so that there was right ability to honor over a wall mm-hmm. rather than just a free for all.
Mm-hmm.
Or my friends who are pastoring a new mm-hmm. church, and the right boundaries of saying, we're not going to let this get too big in mm-hmm. the traditional sense of a big gathering. We're going to boundary this in size mm-hmm. so that we have the better ability to release. Or the boundaries of new marriage, leaving, yeah, cleaving yeah. in one flesh, the boundaries of friends who stumble mm-hmm. and how we help them restore. Yeah. But in all of this is the thought of leadership here
mm-hmm. yeah.
and the thought yes. of a new day that we're entering into, where we're going to have to be present future thinkers mm-hmm. rather so than good. Just past to present so thinkers.
Yeah.
How long can we dismantle?
Mm-hmm.
You can't. Yeah. You can't sit in destructive thinkings of, mm-hmm. oh, we got it wrong. Mm-hmm. At some point, you have to show the future. At yeah. some point, you have to release the future. At mm-hmm. some point, you have to trust others to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I it's a choice. Sorry, yeah. Jonah. It's a choice. You're making yes. a choice, choosing the character choice of, absolutely, now is the time to trust that person. I know that you shared your experience with leadership.
Yeah.
And just briefly, I just want to share mine. Was very yeah, different please. To yours.
Yeah.
Mine was the concept of, I'll encourage, but you'll never get to the place. Mm. It's almost gaslighting someone to believe they're going to be ready, but there was never the opportunity to, oh, go on then, off you go. And maybe that's a millennial thought, like we're always waiting. But actually, Emma, I've heard you say that if you're waiting for something, just make it happen. Take mm-hmm. Samuel as an example, your youngest son.
Yeah.
He's just making it happen. He's heard the Lord and he's just making it happen.
Do you know what? One of my favorite moments of your life, Matt, is we were doing a conference, the leaders retreat, do you mm-hmm. remember? And I don't know, we had about 120 leaders in the room, a lot of husband and wife teams who stay for leadership development after our big September conference. And you came binding in and you suddenly realized that a lot of the wives instinctively do the girly bond and the men were getting a bit like sidelined. Mm-hmm. And you just said, can I start a nest, a men's group online for seeing in the spirit?
Mm-hmm.
And I said to David, thank the Lord for people who just see it and make it happen.
Yeah.
And the answer is like, heck yes, mm-hmm. just do it.
Yeah.
I actually think I took the microphone and said that publicly. Mm-hmm. You are going to follow Matt.
Yeah.
I actually don't know what you do in that group. Maybe that's a bit remiss of me.
No, I just trust him.
I do. I'm like, well, look, I tell you what, mm-hmm. I tend to only hear if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
So now we're several months on, I'm just going to assume it's all going right yeah. because I've heard no bad thing. No,
we had a great time. We met for the last time this year, last week.
Oh, did you?
And we decided, right, we're just going to do a little prophetic check on everyone. We're going to prophesy. We're doing activations because, again, the thought is not, oh, there's one person teaching. No, absolutely not. Let's all be activated. Mm-hmm. Let's all mm-hmm. use the gifts God's given us. And yeah. let's start building each yes. other. We need to build yeah. each other up rather than just, oh, yeah, this is the thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Good. Any other thoughts, gentlemen?
You need people in your armpits. We've said this all throughout the year. Mm-hmm. You need people that help pull you up and see the best in you.
Yeah.
Just like you, Emma, looking at Matt and saying, go on, have a go, do it.
What's the worst that can happen?
But then just like I need people to the left and to my right, I also need to be pulling someone up and I need to be in someone's armpit. And I need to be telling them, come on, you can have a go. Yeah. Let's go. Mm-hmm. Let's make this happen. So it's a both and.
Yeah.
Paul needs the Barnabas, but Paul also needs to be raising up a Timothy. This is an hour to learn both.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. And as we come to the end of this episode, with the end of this journey of what this year has unfolded. You didn't know, Jonah, at the beginning of the year.
I had no idea I was going to be married.
But the end of the year. I mean, like, you went like a rocket. The sense of the yes to God, and I will move, and I will lead, and I will adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And the reward of God.
Yeah.
And the God who is looking for people he can put his weight on, because they've said yes to lead and to take responsibility and to look after others and disciple others. God only tends to back that up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's wild. Look, I mean, using that as an example, this time last year, you had just asked me to do a War Rooms. So I'm just getting started in broadcasting.
Oh, that's right.
Then it was a power hour in January. And then here we are. I'm sitting in this chair.
Living
moved,
here, married.
Married, friends with Matt. We're doing power hours. We're doing what the prophets
God
say
does,
together.
It's fast. It's fast. It's saying yes to the call of God, but it's saying yes to thinking about leading others. Mm-hmm. I think the difference is we've thought for years about my ministry rather than equipping and releasing. And that's the big difference.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for joining us for this episode of What the Prophets Say. We'll see you very soon. Bye. Hello friends, I've got something exciting to share with you. If you want to reach out and grab hold of our hands so that we can take you to the next level, you need to download our Par TV app today. Go to partv.app, and we have there exclusively podcast Par resources that run alongside the podcast for more activation of the power of God in your life. Make sure that you've not missed this opportunity to dive deeper on the partv.app.